Too exhausted to protest, Esme recounted to Marta the story of her first sight of Brunn arguing with Lord Thornbuckle and what followed. She admitted her frustration at having no time to be with Baron because of her course schedule, and her anger at Brunn for stepping in her place.
Tell me, if you hadn't been working so hard and if Baron hadn't been there, do you think you'd have found anything to like in Brunn?
Yes. She could be fun. The few times we had a few minutes together, I enjoyed it. I could see why people liked her so much. We were on the same team for the E&E class exercise, you know. She learned fast. She had good ideas.
Good enough to get herself out of her present predicament.
I don't know. They wouldn't let her take the field exercises. That's the one thing she blamed me for. And I had nothing to do with it. But against a whole planet, I don't think that would have helped. What worries me is that they aren't paying attention to her character in the planning.
I thought you said she had none.
I don't mean sexual morality. I mean her personality, her way of doing things. They're talking as if she were just a game piece. Unless she's dead, she's planning on doing something. And if we don't know what, we're going to find our plans crossing hers.
But the Guernesi said there's no way to communicate with her. That pregnant and nursing women are sequestered. And besides, she can't talk.
She needs to know she's not forgotten. She needs to know someone thinks she's competent.
You sound as if you think you understand her.
Did they tell you about the children on that merchant ship?
I don't know. I don't think so. What does that have to do with Brunn?
If they didn't kill those children, if they were taking them, they'd have to put Brunn in with them. That might be enough to keep her alive, if she thought she had a responsibility to the children. And she'd be planning some rescue for them. I would bet on it.
I suppose it's possible.
And besides, for her to come out of this in the end, even if she is rescued, she needs to feel that she had some effect. It's one of the things they taught us. And Baron knows from experience. A captive who is just rescued like a piece of jewelry or something has a much harder time regaining a normal life. She was not just captured. She was muted and then raped and impregnated. All her options closed. They should be thinking beyond getting her out. To getting her out with some self-respect left.
You couldn't have come up with that if you didn't really care. And you're right. The planning group is not considering any of those things.
Can you get it across to them?
Me? It's your idea.
But none of them will let me near the planning sessions, let alone speak. If you tell them, maybe they'll consider it.
I'll see what I can do. In that and other situations.
Admiral Serrano frowned as the door opened, but her expression eased as Marta Saenz swept through. Marta proceeded to deliver the details about the frustrated attraction between Esme and Baron and the misunderstandings that triggered the explosion between Esme and Brunn.
Esme and my grandson still think they're in love, do they?
All the symptoms. I admit my fondness for young love, messy though it often is. So you can quit looking for hidden political motives in Lieutenant Sweezer's behavior. This is the old story in the book.
That may be, but it doesn't excuse what
she said. No. But if her commander had known from day one that this was a squabble over a man, would he have handled it the way he did?
Well, probably not. We do get late bloomers from time to time, and they do usually make a mess of things, at least once.
Making a mess of love is part of growing up. Making a mess of someone's career, however, requires the connivance of others.
I don't follow you.
Well, as the resident sweet old lady in this facility, the youngsters tell me things. They always have. I suspected that someone else's interest lay in making Lieutenant Sweezer look as bad as possible, and I found that the tainted effluent, as it were, led to a few sources quite remote from Copper Mountain. That's why I went planetside, so I could do a little discreet database poking from a civilian facility.
And you found?
I found Academy classmates of Esme's who were jealous of her success. Much that's been attributed to her has come from these sources, and they've put the worst possible interpretation on what she did say. I found people who actually served with her who find it hard to believe she could be the way she's now being painted. And I found others who want to get influence with your grandson because he's a Serrano, who are very glad to put a barrier between him and Lieutenant Sweezer.
All right. But that doesn't get Lieutenant Suiza off the hook for what she actually said and did. And there's a witness to her saying that Bruin wasn't worth starting a war over.
I said that too, my dear. So did you. So did the Guernsey ambassador more than once. We wrapped it in platitudes, but you know and I know that no one, not even the speaker, and certainly not his daughter, is worth starting a war over.
So, what do you propose to do about this? Since you came here, I presume you have a plan in mind.
Well, having played fairy godmother to at least three other romances recently, I feel I'm on a roll where love is concerned. If Esme and Baron can work out their problems...
You mean you aren't planning to do it for them?
Of course not. Children learn by doing. But if they can work it out, and since they're both still smitten, I expect they can, that will take the teeth out of some of the other criticisms. After all, if a Serrano is her lover...
Ah, so that's why you tackled me first. So I wouldn't tell young Baron to avoid her.
Bingo. Incidentally, if you thought Suiza was bad, you ought to see what's working on him now. One of Esme's classmates, and a very sleek piece of work she is, too. Knows everything Esme doesn't know about men. And since she's also a colonial from one of the Crescent Worlds, you have to wonder where she got that kind of skill. Rumor has it from seducing her senior officers.
I already know about Lieutenant Ferrari. She may have done even worse than you know, according to Harris. If so, her doom is about to be upon her. Harris lent Cutsudas to the cause.
Are you going to give me the details? Wicked woman, but then you are an admiral. There's another thing, though. Lieutenant Suiza, when I talked to her, had what I think are some very good insights into Brun's situation, and some concerns about the planning. She is convinced that no one will listen to her and asked me to pass these ideas on as my own. I'd much rather get her involved in the planning herself.
Can't be done. Lord Thornbuckle's adamant. Apparently he had liked her when he met her at Copper Mountain and feels that this proves she is... treacherous, was his word. He will not have her involved at all. And I doubt you can change his mind, not in the time we have left.
Vida glanced at the wall calendar, and Marta followed that glance. A red rectangle covered the most probable dates for the end of Brun's pregnancy. A green one covered the time when the militia were known to allow before rebreeding a captive. That was their target. Somewhere in that period, they had to extract her, or face even more difficult problems.
All right, one war at a time. I'll present Esme's ideas. They certainly make sense in terms of my knowledge of Brun's character.
Marta found Esme at work in a cubicle, paging through a report, looking thoughtful.
I've just spoken with Admiral Serrano.
Esme flushed a little, the reaction Marta had hoped for.
I told her I thought the reports of your hard-heartedness and political ambitions were exaggerated. And why?
The flush deepened.
You will find that she creates no barrier to your relationship with Baron.
If I ever have one. What if he won't speak to me?
Well, then, you have to see that he does.
But Cassie's always around.
You are not going to make that mistake again. Think, child. What do you know about that young woman? Does she have a good reputation?
No.
Do you really think Baron is the kind of man who prefers that kind of woman?
No.
Then quit being a wet lump and give him some help in getting free of her. Be someone he can prefer with some reason. Personally, I'd recommend a good haircut to start with and a really well-cut exercise suit.
I couldn't.
What? You can't show what you've got because she's displaying herself like a fruit basket? What kind of nonsense is that? Come along.
Marta stood up and watched Esme rise slowly.
I know perfectly well you're just moving things around in here trying to look busy. Your commander's angry with you. Nobody has any real work for you. So I'm demanding your services as an escort.
But you...
My dear, before you embarrass yourself again, I am not just Raffaella's aunt. I hold my own seat in council, though I usually let Ansel vote it for me. And if I wanted to grab any officer up to and including Admiral Serrano for an escort, no one, least of all Vida, would stand in my way. Bunny himself is putty in my hands when I'm in this mood. And you are, after all, the land bride, Suiza. Now come along and quit making difficulties.
Marta was glad to see the salutary lift of spine which that produced, and thoroughly enjoyed her sweep through the corridors of the HQ complex, with Esme Suiza a silent shadow at her side. She could almost see the shock, and imagined it trickling ice water-like down certain spines. The particular blonde spine she most wanted to discomfit didn't appear. Well, that would come later. Esme hung back as Marta led her toward the doors of the most fashionable salon in the city. She had heard of Afino's, including from Brunn, who had recommended it heartily.
No one's ever been able to do anything with my hair. It's too fine and thin, and it frizzes.
And probably all you do is wash it, brush it, and cut it off when it gets too long. Listen, you are not your hair. You have choices. You want Baron, and you want to regain your professional reputation. This will help.
Oh! 3 hours later, Esme stared at her reflected image with astonishment. It was the same hair, but somehow it had consented to take a shape that suggested both competence and charm. Smooth there, a bit of curl here. She looked like herself, but more so. And under the tutelage of the salon staff, she had learned to do it herself, from sopping wet to final combing. After that, Marta dragged her off to the neighboring dress shop.
You need off-duty clothes. I've seen you in those exercise suits.
I sweat.
Yes, but you don't have to sweat while eating dinner.
Marta prowled, sending Esme into the changing room again and again, until she was happy with the result, by which time Esme was finally beginning to understand what the fuss was about. The blue and silver exercise suit was as comfortable as the ones she usually wore, but looked, she had to admit, stunning. 2 days after they'd left, when her new clothes were stowed in her compartment, Marta led Esme back to the lieutenant commander in charge of her section.
Here she is. You can have her back for a while, but I may need her again. Thank you, Lieutenant Suiza. You've been most helpful.
Lieutenant Commander Moslin looked from one to the other.
You're satisfied, Sarah Sines?
With Lieutenant Suiza, of course. Best personal assistant I ever had. Excuse me, I mustn't be late to meet Admiral Serrano.
With a wave, Marta departed, leaving Esme under the lieutenant commander's mistrustful gaze.
Well, I thought she was Lord Thornbuckle's friend, and here she's sticking up for you.
I think I remind her of a niece or something. But of course I did my best.
Yes, well, I suppose you can get back to that report you were working on.
Esme could feel his gaze on her as she walked off. She knew he had sensed some difference, but couldn't pinpoint it. She could, and was amazed that she had never bothered to learn such simple things before. She saw Cassie Ferrati coming toward her and assumed the expression Marta had recommended. Sure enough, Cassie almost stumbled.
Lieutenant Suiza!
Hello, Cassie!
You're... I thought you were on leave.
I'm back, but busy. See you later.
This could be fun. It could actually be fun.
Buoyed up by that thought, she even smiled serenely at Admiral Hornan around the next corner. Baron came to attention.
Ensign Serrano reporting, sir.
His grandmother looked up.
At ease, Ensign. Have a seat. We have family business to discuss.
Family business did not put him at ease, but he sat and waited.
Marta Sines tells me that you and Lieutenant Suiza had a row over Brunn Meager.
Baron almost let his jaw drop, but tightened it in time.
That's not exactly how it happened, sir.
Well, however it happened, and whatever the current status of your feeling for Lieutenant Suiza may be, I wanted you to know that from my perspective, as your grandmother, I have no advice to give. As an admiral, I would like to see Lieutenant Suiza perform at her best. She has a strikingly good best, and would like whatever circumstances might contribute to that end to happen. So if you feel you can do her some good, go ahead.
She's not speaking to me.
Are you sure? Perhaps she thinks you're not speaking to her. Especially since there are others who might have an interest in keeping you two apart.
Lieutenant Ferrati.
His grandmother looked at him as if he were a toddler. He knew that look.
Among others. Baron, you're old enough to know how our family name attracts envy as well as admiration. Lieutenant Suiza's rapid rise to fame and promotion has had a similar effect. It has come to my attention that there are people who feel it in their interests to have you and Lieutenant Suiza at cross purposes. If you did not care for her, it would be one thing, but since you do, it seems to me that it's a matter of family honor not to let them succeed. Subject, of course, to your own feelings.
Yes, sir. Grandmother.
Sir Grandmother is an unusual title, but I'll take it. Seriously, Baron, do you love this woman?
I thought I did, but...
Well, think again. Think, but also feel. It's not for me to play Cupid. If you two are meant for each other, you shouldn't need a Cupid. But take nothing for granted. Clear?
Yes, Grandmother.
Good. If there's fallout, I'll deal with it. I trust your judgment, Baron. Just be sure you have enough data to base it on. Now, how's that investigation of Lieutenant Ferrati coming?
I don't know. Both my captain and my exec told me to keep my nose somewhere else, so I have.
Amazing. Well, we're closing in on our active dates. It would be a help to me to know what's going on. I'd like you to go mention that to Harris, and let her murmur it to your captain's ear, or whatever it takes. Klaus still wants my job, and since he hasn't commanded anything but a desk for the past 19 years... I'm unwilling to let him make a hash of it. Your ostensible message to Harris is that we're having a family celebration since the fleet birthday festivities will be very restrained this year. This is what you can and should tell anyone. But carry this, for her hand only, and use the family handshake.
She handed over a data strip.
Yes, sir.
Dismissed.
Kutsudis pointed out the graphic he had made of Lieutenant Ferrati's illicit activities in the legal database.
She's a natural-born weasel. If we hadn't had that prime data wand, she might have gotten away with it.
Well, what has she done?
She used Pell's access codes into the first level and then someone else's. Would you believe Admiral Hornan's?
How'd she get those?
Kutsudis was watching the vidscreen now, on which Lieutenant Ferrati's neat blonde head was bent studiously over a console.
I have no idea, sir. Possibly from Pell. And while it's none of my business, you should probably know there's rumors that Pell's been called in for an off-cycle physical.
So he has.
And three other Master Chiefs here as well. It's making some of us nervous, to tell you the truth.
In what way?
Kutsudis had the expression of a man not in the mood to trust anyone.
Beyond my area of expertise, sir.
Concerns have been expressed at higher levels than mine, as well.
Just as well, sir. Ah, there she goes.
On screen, Ferrati inserted her data wand into a port in the console.
Bet she inputs a file this time. Look at her left hand. Yeah, there it is.
On Kutsudis's graphic, an orange line snaked along a tangle of other lines and made its way into a blue box, where it flashed steadily.
Altering data, sir. That's 100% clear.
Do we know what the data were prior to alteration?
I don't, no, sir. But I do know there was a secure backup made last night. Blind copy to a storage unit she'll never find. And the trace on her wand will prove she altered something and where in the file it is.
These are very serious charges, Commander Escobar. I found Lieutenant Ferrati to be a most efficient officer.
Admiral Hornan's glance at Baron mixed suspicion and resentment in equal portions.
The Admiral is right. These are serious charges. That is why I brought them to you rather than calling Lieutenant Ferrati in myself. Under the circumstances, political as well as military, it seemed preferable to have you in on this from the beginning.
Not the beginning if you've already done the investigation.
Only enough to be sure the original allegation was founded on fact, Admiral. There's more to do.
Well, let's just hear her side of it. Lieutenant Ferrari, would you come in, please?
Right away, Admiral. Should I bring the latest information from the database search that the Admiral asked about?
Not right now, Lieutenant.
A flush crept up Hornan's neck. Baron dared a sidelong glance at Escobar and saw that he had not missed it. In only a few moments, Cassie Ferrati came into the Admiral's office, wide-eyed and smiling. A smile that widened into a quick grin meant to be complicit when she saw Baron, and sobered when no one smiled back.
Admiral?
Cassie, Lieutenant, these officers have made some serious charges against you. I want to know what you have to say.
Against me?
For just an instant in profile, Baron saw a flicker that might have been panic, but her calm returned.
Why? What am I supposed to have done? Did I bother poor Ensign Serrano? I didn't mean to.
No, Lieutenant. I must ask, have you accessed any fleet records which you are not cleared to access?
Of course not. Not without specific orders to do so.
Which would give you authorization, yes. Are you sure of that?
Baron watched the pulse in Ferrati's neck beat a little faster.
Yes, Admiral.
Have you altered any data in any records whatsoever?
You mean like watch records or something? No, sir.
Or in a database? Have you ever intruded into a database and altered records?
That telltale pulse was faster now.
Not without specific orders to do so, no, Admiral.
Then if I told you that you were alleged to have intruded into the records of the investigations surrounding the mutiny on Despite, and alleged to have changed certain files containing interview data on Lieutenant Esme Suiza, would you deny it?
I would, Admiral.
Ferrati flushed suddenly and rounded on Baron.
I deny it absolutely, and moreover, I would consider the source. Ensign Serrano, Admiral, has a grudge against me. He thought his family position gave him a right to take liberties beyond his rank. I had to be quite firm with him, and he knows I could have reported him for harassment. He probably made up this nonsense just to get back at me.
Baron felt the blood rushing to his head, but a stern look from Escobar kept him silent. Admiral Hornan gave a short nod in Baron's direction and cocked his head at Escobar.
Well, Commander, I find the foolish behavior of a hot-blooded young man of a high-status family more likely than illegal acts by someone like Lieutenant Ferrari.
Admiral, with all due respect, that won't do. Lieutenant Ferrati was pursuing Ensign Serrano, not the other way around. I knew it, and so did everyone else on the ship. You'll find reference to Lieutenant Ferrati's behavior in her previous fitness reports. Her present position in the last promotion cohort of her class reflects that behavior.
Ferrati's high color was patchy now, flushing and fading on those perfect cheekbones.
That's not true!
And while her sexual proclivities would not, in themselves, be cause for disciplinary action, as long as she didn't interfere with anyone else's fitness for duty, her intrusion into secure databases, her altering of the data, and her lies about her officers, including Ensign Serrano, would be.
And you think you have proof of this?
Baron watched Ferrati pale as the change in his tone and expression got through to her. He could almost feel sympathy, because in that moment Hornan was changing sides, preparing to divest himself of an embarrassment.
Yes, we have the records of such intrusion, from a data wand initialized by Lieutenant Ferrati, along with vid records of her using it that are contemporaneous with the intrusion and alteration.
I didn't...
How detailed are these records?
Extremely, Admiral. They include all the authorization codes she used to complete her intrusion, and to fake, I presume, the orders for the alteration.
The Admiral looked at Ferrati. Baron hoped no such look would ever be turned on him.
I would have to see such proof. But if you have it...
We do, Admiral.
Then Lieutenant Ferrati is, as you say, facing serious charges. Lieutenant, your data wand, if you please.
Ferrati pulled it out slowly.
And that report you are working on is where, Lieutenant?
On my desk, Admiral. But the Admiral knows who...
You will consider yourself confined to quarters, Lieutenant. You will speak to no one except the investigating officer when such has been appointed.
But, Admiral, it's a plot! It's...
Dismissed, Lieutenant.
Baron shivered as she turned and passed him. He had disliked her. He had come to despise her for what she had done to Esme. But he wouldn't have wished on anyone the devastation he saw in those violet eyes.
Admiral, she used your access codes. I'm afraid there's no way to keep that out of the records.
Well, she would, wouldn't she? If she wanted to alter data, she'd have to have someone with enough authority.
Did you give her those codes?
Commander, I may have been an idiot, but you are not the person who will handle the investigation of this matter. It goes to internal security, as you very well know, and I will answer their questions to the best of my ability, but not yours. I suppose you're going to tell me I now have to revise my opinion of Lieutenant Sweeza?
No, Admiral, I'm not. What the Admiral thinks of Lieutenant Sweeza is the Admiral's business. She's not my officer. But if the data are tainted...
Hornan waved a hand.
Oh, yes. First things first. We have to inform Internal Security and then Grand Admiral Savanche. He's going to be so pleased about this. Just what he needs, something else to worry about. Get me Internal Security!
Admiral Serrano's going to have a clear run with the task force.
Why, sir?
Because Hornan's not going to risk what you might say if he tries for it. Don't play stupid, Ensign. You know as well as I do that he must have been involved at some level. For one thing, Ferrati isn't smart enough to get his codes without his help. And Pell couldn't help her. He couldn't remember his own codes, let alone the Admiral's. Now, if that civilian, Lady Marta, what's her name, can put a collar on Lord Thornbuckle, we might finally get this rescue attempt off the ground.
Sir.
It's been a mess. It wouldn't have been easy anyway. But Thornbuckle's been more hindrance than help. And Hornan has kept putting obstacles in the way. And I would never have suspected that nailing Ferrati would get rid of the other problems, too.
Such as what to do about Esme Sweeza, Baron waited for his captain's dismissal, then made his way to the first public comm booth he could find and looked up Esme's comm code. She had one now, he was glad to see.
Lieutenant Sweeza?
Lieutenant, it's Ensign Serrano. I need to talk to you.
Baron felt himself turning hot, then cold, then hot again.
In the office, or, I mean...
Anywhere. There's something you need to know, and besides...
I love you madly was not something he could say over a public line.
How about the base library? 10 minutes? 15?
15. I'm just outside Jir Falcon.
Baron made it in 10, nonetheless, not realizing until he almost overran a pair of commanders strolling ahead of him just how fast he was going.
Patience, calmness.
He paused in the library entrance and didn't see her coming in either direction. He ducked inside, and there she was.
Lieutenant.
Ensign.
Her eyes glowed. Her whole being glowed. Baron found it hard to believe there were people who had thought he might be attracted to Cassie Ferrati.
I'm so sorry.
Silently, Baron looked at Esme, and she looked back. Waltraud Meyerson had been watching the young female officer's lame attempt to pretend an interest in the online catalog. She was waiting for someone. It was not the first time Waltraud had seen a student hanging around waiting for another. She could not mistake it. Sure enough, a few minutes later, a young male officer arrived. They spoke, they paused, they blushed and stammered. It was all very normal, but also very distracting when she was trying to correlate Professor Lemon's data with her own for the impeccably organized report she would present in a few hours. The librarian was, of course, nowhere to be seen. He never was at this time of day. That didn't bother Waltraud ordinarily, since she didn't need his help to navigate her own and Professor Lemon's databases, but he was responsible for keeping order. Without his direction and left to their own devices, these two would murmur sweet nothings for hours. She knew their type. Waltraud rose to her full height. The two looked at her with the guilty expression typical of young love.
This is a library, not a trysting place. Kindly go pursue your passion elsewhere.
Shock blanked their expressions for a moment. Then they turned and left quickly.
Better.
Perhaps now she could find a way to convince these military people that the key to extracting people from a hostile society would come from better thinking, not more guns. Baron turned to Esme the moment they got out the door.
I love you, madly.
Me too. Wasn't she awful?
Yes. Oh, Esme, let's not ever, ever fight again.
My cousin Lucy says people in love can fight and get over it.
And her background is?
More experience than I've got. She said I was an idiot.
Maybe, but you're my idiot, dear idiot. Well, Lieutenant, sir. Oh, and by the way, Lieutenant Ferrati is confined to quarters, and she will be facing charges.
What?
I can't tell you all of it. I mean, I'd better not, at least not out here, but that's why I had to avoid you after you got back. I was supposed to pretend to go along with her.
I think she lied about me.
She did more than that. She was trying to insert incriminating stuff in your old personnel and legal files, but we really shouldn't discuss that right now.
Well, fine. Let's discuss...
us. Maybe with something to eat?
The commander, with the shoulder flashes of headquarters staff, put up a chart.
So, now that your agent has confirmed that she's there and knows where she is, we get to the specifics. It's not unheard of for men to sneak over the back wall of the nursery compound for a quick poke at some woman they particularly want. He can grab her, bundle her into his ground car, and be out of the city in 20 minutes.
It sounded like a ridiculous plan to Marta, but she had given up trying to convince them that they had to cooperate with Brunn, not treat her like lost luggage. She glanced across the room at Professor Meyerson, who had come with her usual stack of books, papers, and data cubes. Meyerson had footnotes and bibliography to back up her views, which were similar to Marta's, but that hadn't worked either. A female commander across the room raised her hand.
What if she resists? How will she know this man is our agent?
He can tell her.
And she's supposed to believe that after almost 2 years of captivity?
It might work, or Brunn, being Brunn, might clobber the fellow and take the car herself. And then where would they be? She would have no idea where to go, and they would have no idea what had happened.
He tells us that for enough money, he can get her passage off-world in a small atmospheric shuttle. He will take her out of the city, provide a disguise, then send her to this other person. Now, our present plan is to insert an SAR, which can approach quite close in micro-jumps, to pick her up, with the rest of the task force standing by at a distance in case of trouble.
Someone else asked the question Marta wanted to ask about system defenses, and she listened to the answer with half her mind, the other half wondering what Brunn was doing. Not sitting still, waiting to be rescued. That much she was sure of. Brunn picked up the paring knife and slid it into her sleeve. The matron was supposed to count the knives each day, but she didn't. She liked to doze in her own room after swigging from an earthenware jar, and a good half the time left the kitchen unlocked. Brunn had checked that repeatedly, making sure that her theft had a reasonable chance of going unnoticed. The knife's pressure against her arm, under the bands she tied to hold it, gave her courage again. She had waited as long as she could. She dared not wait longer for rescue. Neither she nor her babies had to live in this place, but when she laid the blade to the moist, soft neck of the sleeping redhead, she was sure which his father was. She knew she could not do it. She didn't love the babies, not as mothers were reputed to do, the way the other mothers here seemed to love theirs, but she didn't hate them either. It was not their fault. They had not engendered themselves on her unwilling body. She could not take them with her when she escaped, though. She was going to have to disguise herself as a man somehow, and men did not carry babies around the streets, even if two squirming and all too vocal babies would not have slowed her down too much. If she left them behind, they would be squalling for their next meal in just an hour or so. Yet she could not face killing them just to give herself a longer start. Another idea occurred to her. Though the nursery had no drugs that she knew, and she knew nothing about which, if any, of the herbs in the pantry might put the babies to sleep, there was a simple soporific available to anyone with access to fruit and water and a little time. In late afternoon, she walked, as usual, in the orchard, carrying one baby on her back and the other in front. Her feet had toughened. The gravel paths no longer hurt her. Beneath the long skirt, her legs had developed ropes of hard muscle from the exercises she'd sweated on. Without the babies, she would be able to move fast and far. She would be able to fight if she was not taken off guard. She did not intend to be off guard again. If only she knew where to find Hazel and the little girls, where to find open country in which she was sure she could hide. Out of sight of the house, she slid the knife into her hand and then laid it in the crotch of an apple tree. She stuffed some of last year's fallen leaves around it and strolled on, coming back to the house with a spray of wildflowers in her hand. 2 days later, she pilfered a jug from the kitchen. She carried it into the orchard, concealed in the sling she now used to carry the babies. It was the wrong season for ripe fruit, but she had dried fruit, honey, and water. The mix fermented in only a few days of warm sunshine. It smelled odd, but definitely alcoholic. She tasted it cautiously. It had a kick, enough, she hoped, to put the babies heavily to sleep. As the task force planning crept onward, Marta kept a weather eye on Bunny. He had not softened his opposition to Esme Sweeza, even when it became obvious that much of the evidence against her had been lies and more lies. It made no sense. She had known him most of his life. He was neither stupid nor vicious. His reputation for staying calm in a crisis and being fair to all parties had made him the one person the Grand Council would trust after Chemtree's abdication. She was tempted to contact Miranda, conspicuously absent, but refrained. Never get between man and wife, her grandmother had taught her, and in her life she'd seen nothing but grief come of it when someone tried. So, 5 days before the task force was due to depart, she tackled him privately.
Don't start. You're going to tell me Sweeza isn't that bad, that she's earned her slot as an exec on Shrike, that it's not fair to pull her off?
No, I'm going to ask you why you blame Sweeza for Brunn's behavior.
She drove her into a frenzy.
Bunny, who chose Brunn's genome pattern?
We did, of course.
Including her personality profile?
Well, yes, but...
You told me before you deliberately chose a risk-taking profile. You chose outgoing, quick-reacting, risk-taking... A girl who would always find the glass half full and think a room full of manure meant a cute pony around the corner.
Yes.
And you got a charming, lovable scapegrace, full of mischief as a basket of kittens, and you enjoyed it for years, didn't you?
Yes, but...
You spoiled her, Bunny.
He stared at her, his ears reddening.
You chose for her a personality profile, a physical type, and a level of intelligence which would predictably make her likely to get into certain kinds of trouble. And what did you do in her young days to provide the counterbalance she needed of judgment and self-control?
We'd had other children, Marta. We were experienced parents.
Yes, for the bright conformists you designed first. And they turned out well. You had given them what they needed. Did you give Brunn what she needed?
We gave her everything.
Bunny, I know this sounds like condemnation, but it's not. Brunn is a very unusual young woman. And she would have needed a very unusual childhood to bring her to her present age, able to handle her talent safely. It's no wonder you and Miranda, enchanted just like everyone else with that explosion of joy, didn't provide the kind of background that would do her good.
Bunny almost nodded. She could see the softening of the muscles in his neck.
But it's my opinion that your real objection to Esme Sweeza, perhaps unknown to you, is that she's like Brunn with a throttle. With controls. And her father, whatever he's like, did a better job for his daughter than you did for yours.
She's not anything.
Oh, yes, she is. Have you read the combat reports on her? I have. Intelligent? Very. Charismatic? Yes, especially in a crisis. Risk taker? She came back to Xavier and saved the planet. And incidentally, Brunn. Brunn thought they had a lot in common. That's why she was dogging Sweeza like a little girl tagging a big sister.
I can't believe that.
I can't believe you're still not seeing your own part in this. That's why you didn't want Miranda out here, isn't it? She'd admit it and she'd argue with you.
I can't.
Bunny, it's still not your fault. I think you made mistakes, but so does every parent. But it's also not Lieutenant Sweeza's fault. She didn't drive Brunn into a mindless frenzy that lasted 30-odd days. She had a quarrel which would have been over with the next day if they'd had a chance to make up. And in your heart, you know that. Channel your rage where it should go, to those thugs who took her, and quit trying to lay your guilt on Sweeza.
He was looking away from her. She waited until the muscle in his jaw quit twitching.
We need everyone's best to get her out. Lieutenant Sweezer's best is very good, and it could save Brunn's life.
All right. As far as I'm concerned, she can go. But if she does anything to harm Brunn's chances...
I will personally take her hide off in strips. Nice, narrow ones, very slowly. And you can have her kidneys on toast for all I care.
It's so small a chance. So small.
You just increased it. Now, shall I tell the Admiral, or will you?
The man in the checked shirt, true to his persona as country bumpkin in the city, had wandered up and down the various streets, visiting the breeding houses once or twice, and coming again to look at the showing of the yellow-haired abomination from space. He had told several men at the bar he frequented that he was afraid she wouldn't be released for breeding before he had to go back up the hills. Finally, one of the men made the suggestion he'd been waiting for. Go around to the back of the orchard and wait for her. No harm done if she was bred a few weeks early, and likely no one would ever know. Watch a day or so, see when she went out and who went with her. He was watching when she went to the last but one apple tree and put something in its crotch. She looked a lot more like what he'd expected out here in the orchard than during the showings, but he wondered if she would cooperate when the time came. If she wouldn't, he'd have to drug her, and she would be difficult to lug over the wall, big as she was. And it looked like she might have plans of her own. He hoped they wouldn't trip him up. He walked on and made his arrangements. He needed a ground car. He walked across the city to rent it for cash from the spaceport vendor. Simplicity, an apt name, Brunn thought, had told her all sorts of things the other women mentioned only in passing. Unlike Brunn, she kept track of time, and in her artless chatter had revealed the clues that let Brunn begin tracking market days even while confined to the nursery. Someone went out every day to get small amounts of fresh greens. 3 times a week, several of the staff women went out and returned with a wide variety of supplies, whatever was needed for daily work which the women could not supply for themselves. Starting with their holy day, they had market day, then skip 2, then market day, then skip 1, then market day, then holy day. So Brunn decided that the first market day would be the best for her purposes. Several of the staff women would be gone, and everyone would be more relaxed after the rigors of the holy day. The hard thing would be to find the house where Hazel stayed. Simplicity had described the house at length, its gardens, its weaving shed, its wool house, its several kitchens, the quarters for children, for wives, for the master. What she could not describe, what it had never occurred to her to describe, was its location. Brunn realized the girl had hardly ever been out of it, and thus had no way to describe where it was in relation to anything else. On the midweek market day before she planned to go, Brunn decided to test her plans. She would nurse the babes to fullness, mingling a little of the homebrew into her milk. They were greedy feeders, and she had discovered that if she dripped sugared fruit juice down her breast, they'd take it along with her milk. Then she'd see how long they slept, which would give her some idea of how long she had to find Hazel. Brunn finished her chores and noticed that all but 2 of the staff had left to go to market. She picked up the babies and caught the attention of one of the remaining staff women. She nodded toward the orchard.
Go ahead, then. Good day for a walk.
Brunn mimed eating.
Oh, you want to take your lunch out there? Oh, fine. I'll ring the bell for you to come back in case you fall asleep.
Brunn took a small loaf of bread, fresh baked that morning, and sliced off a hunk of cheese, laying the knife neatly back in its place. The woman had poured her a jug of fruit juice and water, and on this day Brunn noticed that this was an unnecessary courtesy. She smiled. She couldn't help it. The woman smiled back, clearly pleased. She could not afford this offer of friendship, if that's what it was. She took the jug and her lunch, tucked them into the sling where the redhead lay content, shifted the back sling until the other baby was balanced better, and moved out onto the paved terrace between the nursery buildings and the orchard. She strolled in her usual way along the right-hand path, pausing now and then to look up into the trees at the hard green fruit that would be ripe in a few months. This was not the day. This was merely practice. But her breath came short. Her heart beat so wildly that she felt it must be drumming loud enough to hear. She tried to relax, reaching out to stroke a branch heavy with fruit. But the babies caught her tension and began to squirm. The one in back flailed at her head with his arms. That, oddly enough, steadied her. She moved on more quickly now, though today there was no hurry, to her favorite spot near the far end of the orchard. When she'd first made it this far up the little rise, she'd been able to see the building through bare branches, but now the orchard trees were in full leaf, and she knew they could no more see her than she could see them. She laid the babies down on the little quilts folded into the slings and put her lunch down as well. The babies rolled and played, making wide-handed swipes at each other. She bit off a hunk of bread as she watched, thinking over her plan again, trying to improve it. By the time Brunn finished eating, they were getting fussy, looking at her.
All right, then. Let's do it.
Nursing both at once was harder now that they were bigger, but she was used to it. She leaned back against the tree and let her mind drift. One way or another, in less than 7 days, she would be somewhere else. Maybe dead. She wasn't going to be taken alive, not again. But maybe somewhere. She couldn't picture it quite. Her mind threw up pictures from her past life. Hills, valleys, forests, fields, island beaches, rocky ledges. The shuttle field on Rotterdam. Then the shuttle, rumbling down the runway, taking off, the sky darkening, darkening, the stars. She shook her head abruptly. The twins had taken most of her milk. It was time to try out her brew. She added a little honey to make it sweeter and dribbled it into their mouths as they sucked. Redhead made a face before going on, but the dark-haired one didn't pause in his rhythm. She had no idea how much to use. Not as much today. She didn't want anyone to notice and worry about them.
Do babies go to sleep with a spoonful or a cup?
Their sucking slowed, finally.
They gain a kilo whenever they fall asleep.
Carefully, Brunn laid them on the little quilts. She levered herself up and stood, fastening her dress and then stretching. She found the knife she had hidden, tied a length of yarn around it, and hung it around her neck. Then took the cloth strips she'd made and bound them tight around her breasts. When it was time to go, really time, she would bind her breasts before she fastened her dress. But this was only practice. With a last glance back to make sure she could not be seen through the thick leaves, she walked over to the wall again, steeling herself. She looked back at the babies, still sleeping. When she turned again to the wall, a man was looking over it. Brunn stood frozen, immobilized with shock. The man stared at her.
Brunn?
Brunn's heart lurched, then pounded. Someone who knew her name, who used her name. It must be a rescue. She nodded, giddy with relief.
Can you climb over?
She nodded again, and a wad of brown cloth flew toward her. She dropped back, furious.
Put that on. Cover your dress and your hair. Then wait for me to call. I'm watching for ground cars. Don't bring the babies. They'll be cared for.
The babies? I only gave them a few drops each. Will they sleep long enough?
Brunn yanked her long skirt up around her waist and ran to them, fumbled at the jug, and poured more of the honeyed brew onto her hand.
Will they suck? Can they swallow?
Their mouths caught at her finger, sucking, and she dribbled more brew into each mouth. Then she dragged the garment on, a hooded cloak-like thing too warm for the day, and ran back to the wall. Even in those few moments, she was aware how good it felt to have her legs free, not bound by the narrow skirt. While she waited, she thought how to make him understand that they had to find Hazel and the little girls. She could not go without them. If she could not save her babies from this world's horrors, she must save them.
Now.
She stood up. The wall was not as tall as she was, and she made it easily. It was wide enough to lie on. She rolled the cloak around her and then dropped off to be steadied by his waiting arm.
Are the babies inside? When will they cry?
How am I supposed to answer that?
Brunn mimed drinking, then sleeping, and he took her arm.
Come along. We have to get to the car. Look down.
Fuming, Brunn looked down at the rough pavement and went where he directed. She didn't want to argue with him in the street where anyone might see, but she had to convince him about Hazel. He stopped beside a ground car parked in a row. He opened the driver's door, and then the back doors popped open.
Get in.
She looked him full in the face and mouthed, "Hazel."
Look down. Get in before someone notices.
She slipped into the back seat and leaned forward, waiting for him. As soon as he closed his own door, she tapped his shoulder. He glanced back.
Hazel.
I can't understand you. What's wrong?
Damn the idiot fool. How did Lady Cecilia keep from bursting?
There on the seat beside him were a map and notebook with a pen. She reached over and snatched at it, wrote, "Get Hazel," in large letters, and then "Ranger Bowie House." He read, then paled.
We can't do that. No one can get in there. Damn it, woman, you want off this planet or not?
She tapped, "Get Hazel," again, glaring into his face, trying to give him a mind-to-mind transfusion of her determination.
Who the hell is Hazel, anyway?
She wrote again, "Girl on ship. Get her away, too."
Can't do it. Now you sit back, and I'll take you where it's arranged.
The barrier between them started to rise. Brunn lunged forward, putting her weight on it.
Get back, you fool!
The barrier slid back the small distance it had risen. She paid no attention, wriggling over the barrier into the front passenger seat. Up here, the windows weren't frosted. The man jerked the ground car out of its parking space and accelerated.
Gods, woman, if they see you up here...
She held the paper out. "Get Hazel."
I can't, I tell you. Ever since Mitch Pardew got elected Ranger Bowie, he's been angling for the captaincy. I can't barge in there and get some fool girl. I got you. That's what I contracted to do.
Brunn glanced at the ground car controls, at his movements as he turned, slowed, sped up again, made another turn.
Simple enough.
After the next turn, she grabbed the wheel and yanked it hard. He yanked back and stared at her long enough to almost hit another ground car.
Damn it! Woman, it's no wonder they muted you. Heaven knows what you'd say if you could talk.
She scribbled rapidly on the notebook. "Get Hazel. It's market day. She goes out. Market near Ranger Bowie House." She pushed that in front of his face. The ground car swerved again. She lowered it slightly so he could read and see over it.
Can't do it. Too dangerous. I have it all planned out. Gah!
Brunn poked a finger into his ear, hard, and laid the pruning knife on his thigh, pointed where he could not ignore it. The ground car swerved wildly, then he got it back on his side of the street.
You are completely insane! All right, we'll drive past Ranger Bowie House and the damn market, but you gotta get in the back. If anyone sees...
He glanced at her, and she bared her teeth.
All right, I said, I'll do it. We'll go past, but you're gonna get us killed.
With some care, Brunn reversed herself into the back seat, making sure that she had enough weight on the barrier to prevent its coming back up if the controls weren't actually broken. She laid the knife at the back of his neck. It would do no good there, unless it was strong enough to slide between the vertebrae, but she judged it too obvious to hold it to his throat.
They told me you were wild, but they didn't tell me you were crazy.
Brunn grinned. They hadn't known what had been done to her, or they'd have known how crazy she was.
That's Ranger Bowie's house.
Brunn stared, uncertain. It was one of five huge houses arranged around the sides of a plaza. In the center was a huge five-pointed star outlined in flowers and grass. Pretty, really, if you weren't trying to escape the place.
Ranger Houston, Ranger Crockett, Ranger Travis, and Ranger Lamar. Ranger Travis is captain right now. The nearest market to Ranger Bowie's house is down this street. The women's service door is right down there, see?
Brunn saw a shadowed gap in the long stucco wall. As they drove past, she could see the door set back from the sidewalk and the little alcove for the gate guard. They went past one cross street, then another. Ahead, down this street, a rope blocked off traffic beyond the next cross street.
That's the market. Ground cars can't go there, nor you. Now you've seen there's nothing we can do, we can...
Brunn pressed the tip of the knife just below his ear. With her other hand, she scrabbled for the pen and notebooks and printed, "Go around. Keep looking." On the third circuit, Brunn spotted a woman walking toward Ranger Bowie House, baskets in each hand, still some blocks from it. Something about the quick, short shuffle caught her eye. She tapped the driver's shoulder.
That her?
He eased the car closer. It was hard to tell. The dark head bent forward, the slim body gliding along with those short, quick steps enforced by her dress. But as the car slid past, Brunn caught a glimpse of the serious face, that tucked-in lower lip. She tapped the man's arm again, hard.
I'm gonna regret this.
But he pulled the car to the curb and got out.
You, girly.
Hazel stopped, eyes on the ground.
You from Ranger Bowie House?
She nodded.
I got business there. Get him back.
He popped the rear doors. Brunn could feel Hazel's confusion, her uncertainty, her near panic.
Hurry up now. I don't want to have to tell Mitch you're lazy.
She ducked into the car then, eyes still down. Then she saw Brunn, and her eyes widened. Brunn grinned. The driver got back in and tried to raise the shield.
Sit low.
Brunn? What? Where?
Brunn mouthed escape, but Hazel shook her head. So Brunn made a rocket of one hand and jerked it upward. Hazel stared, then grinned, almost bouncing on the seat in excitement.
Really? I was trying to figure a way. I'd found out where you were and all, and I told Simplicity as much as I could without getting in trouble, hoping she'd see you.
Brunn nodded. She mimed the ground car, taking them to the rocket. She didn't know if that was the plan. She still didn't know what the plan was, but surely that was the gist of it. Then she showed Hazel the notebook and wrote, "Little girls."
We can't take them.
Brunn tapped the notebook.
No, we can't. I already decided that months ago. They're happy, they're safe, and they wouldn't make it anyway.
Brunn stared at Hazel, but Hazel's expression didn't waver.
We have to. Leastways, at least we have to try. You, for sure. And your babies?
Brunn shrugged and wrote, "Can't take them. Too risky. Too little."
See? Same with Brandy and Stassi. We can't do it.
Glad one of you's got sense. All right now, we got us a little problem. I plan to pass Brunn off as a man. Brought along men's clothes for her. They're under the seat there. But I don't know what to do about Hazel.
Brunn mimed a purchase to Hazel and nodded to the driver.
Tell him.
Hazel looked scared, her mouth pinched tight.
Brunn says buy some.
Buy some? Buy some, she says. And just how am I supposed to stop and buy some?
But he pulled over a few streets further on and made his way to a sidewalk vendor. Brunn, peeking over the barrier, saw him choose blue pants, a brown shirt, and high-topped boots like most of the men wore, and a hat. He was back in just a few minutes, and when he started the car again, he threw the clothes over the barrier.
You change now, both of you. Put your dresses under the seat. I'll get rid of them later. You'll have to cut your hair, but not here. Can't leave hair in the car. I've got knives for both of you.